Welcome to our Friday Five Live podcast hosted by Meg Foster. Meg has spent 20 years in higher education focused on student success initiatives and working in areas such as orientation, faculty development, online learning, student leadership, and first-year initiatives.
Happy Friday, everybody. It is so fantastic to see so many folks chatting in where they're listening from today. Folks all over LTU come to hear you and spend time with you. And I love seeing Tom on from my neck of the woods from Piedmont Virginia Community College. So please do chat in. Let us know where you're listening from. We are starting March, Women's History Month. And we also are curious about March and it's starting like a lion or a lamb in your neck of the woods. Looks like a little bit of everything out there weather-wise today. We will use the chat. So, you know, LT's great about monitoring it, but I will too. So if you have questions, you have thoughts, you have best practices, please know that we welcome your additions to our conversation. And I'm just so thrilled that we're going to talk today about this concept of the hidden curriculum in higher education. And last month, we talked about different ways that we can begin the engagement process with our students and building community. And we were talking about creating culturally responsive content in our classes. And so I feel like this is just a beautiful connection point to last month's podcast, which is up on our website. So I welcome you to check that out. But thrilled to be joined today by LaTonya L.T. Rees-Miles. She is back, folks, to share with us about the hidden curriculum. And so just as a reminder, in our PowerPoint, which Melissa put in the chat for everybody, you've got how to access all of this content and share it with other folks. So LaTonya is the director of university partnerships at ReUp Education. She herself is a first generation college graduate and a self-described former stop-out student and has, you know, so much experience both, you know, working in the college environments, as you can see, you know, with her extensive curriculum CV, but also that experience, you know, you're so wonderful about sharing your own personal experience, which I think has really guided this work that you've done now for a couple of years. So LT, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me back, Meg. I'm so excited today.
No, this is a topic near and dear to your heart, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So two things of note. One, for the special occasion, I'm wearing my favorite hoodie, which is from Prince George's County Community College. So shout out. And I'm glad that you mentioned it's listed there, outside of NBA basketball, The Flash, hidden curriculum is probably one of my favorite things to talk about. So excited to speak with you today.
Awesome. And I do, LT was really kind to come on last year and talk with us about supporting first generation learners and the concept of stopping out and how we can really think differently about that space. And she really blew my mind. And so I invite you, please, if you haven't listened to that podcast, you don't want to miss it, because I think it's going to really be a perfect touch point to the conversation that we're going to have today. So awesome shout out to PGCC. It's a fantastic school. I spent some time there myself. So we've always got questions prepared, but as I mentioned, if you have questions, don't hesitate, throw those in the chat, and we will weave those into our conversation today. You know, it's funny, I'm going to kick off with this question because I was in a meeting last month where I got called out to do this very thing. I mentioned hidden curriculum and somebody very appropriately said, well, can you explain what that is to us? So could you start off maybe just by defining this term? What is the hidden curriculum in higher education and why is it significant? Why is that important?
Yeah, so I'm going to start with a story, Meg. And I'll add, Meg, you've already said this already, we're a very chat-friendly group. And so if people want to add to it, by all means, do so if they have their own definition of hidden curriculum. But here's my quick story, Meg. My quick story is that our son went to a Catholic high school. And his senior year, he went on this thing called Kairos Retreat, okay? My husband and I had not experienced a Kairos Retreat. But the school sent, some materials. It's like overnight, really important event. We got the sense of that. And there was a time when the students were coming back from that retreat that we were supposed to pick up our son. So my husband and I decided, oh, well, this is such a special event. We'll bring his little, our son's little sister with him. We're going to take him out to dinner. And so we get to this event. If anyone's familiar with Kairos, please put address this in the chat. So we get there, and as we're walking toward the church to pick up our son, we're noticing that families are coming with balloons and those fancy Lays, with the candy and everything. We're like, oh, wait a minute. Yes, and Maria had Kairos at her at their high school. Like, what? Hold on, right? We don't have that. So now we're showing up empty-handed. We get to the door, and then we're told that our daughter can't be there, right? This is his little sister. And we're like, but wait, she's not gonna go to Catholic school. Like, she's so little, like, nope, she can't have this experience because if she sees something, she'll tell other people. So I kid you not, our daughter was sequestered for this 2 hour, what ended up being a 2 hour event because allegedly, she couldn't be there, right? So what ended up being started off being a really, exciting event in our family, a rite of passage. Like, we started feeling angry, I would say, confused, because I was fault. We got this message about, hey, this thing is happening, but clearly there was another thing that was happening too, right? That's what we mean by hidden curriculum. This idea that there are rules, behaviors, and expectations that one is supposed to know, but they aren't taught explicitly or directly. And it comes with it, like these unofficial or unwritten expectations that often have unintended lessons, right? So that's generally how I like to think of the hidden curriculum, not just a fish out of water situation, but something a bit more nuanced than that. So I'd love to know if people have other kinds of definitions of hidden curriculum, but that's the primary one that I use.
That's a really great story to illustrate that feeling of, I mean, you can extrapolate it so beautifully to like college student, you're showing up for this first day, you're excited, you're anxious, it's this new thing, right? And everybody else seems to know what's going on.
Right. You're like, wait a minute.
Right.
I looked on the website.
I mean, I went on a college tours last week with, or week 2 weeks ago with our oldest daughter, and we're at Elon University, which if you haven't been there, it's real beautiful, folks. And they made a comment about the bursar's office, which I thought was a really weird thing to point out to prospective, no prospective student cares about a
Listen,
bursar's
no.
office, right? And I made the, there's that great line in Hamilton where he meeting Aaron Burr and he's like, it's a pun on bursar. And I did totally mortify our oldest child when I pulled that out of thin air. But those are those moments where, oh, all of a sudden we're talking a language I don't understand.
Yeah, and then I think you were headed in this direction. So what's the consequence of that, right? So we're not just, and so just so folks can understand, we're not talking about like sort of like the typical things. Obviously, all of us go through new situations, so that's not what we're talking about. But when you have a situation where other people seem to know something that you like, there's this sense that other people are kind of getting it and you don't. That's where like the inequity can come in. That's where the imposter syndrome can rear its ugly head. And I also want to clarify too that the hidden curriculum can appear in a classroom. It can appear in co-curricular experiences, like these big sort of events like orientation, for example, move-in. Oh my gosh, we could do a whole conversation about move-in in the hidden curriculum. But I also want to bring up too, the hidden curriculum exists with physical spaces, right? So it could be architecture. It could be the campus layout. When we're talking about a physical campus, can you walk on the grass or not? Like, how do you know that? Like, there's usually not an explicit rule. You kind of have to observe and find out, is that space safe for me? Can I walk on this grass? Can I go through this door? All these things come about.
And Joe has put such a great
Oh, yeah.
comment
I see.
in our chat here about a student who was kind of struggling, and the student's takeaway was the instructor is always telling me what I did wrong, but never showing me how to do things right. And you know, I know, I mean, when we work in colleges, and I know I've probably said this, but like I love college, right? Like that's why I wanted to like work at one, because it was such a an exciting place to be a part of. But I have this like kind of speech I give myself at the start of every semester that the students I'm teaching in my first year experience class, they don't necessarily, they're not in the same place, right? Like I can't approach them with the assumption that they're loving this space because they haven't been there yet. Like it's all new to them. So we start with a space of, you know, helping you to feel loved and belonging, and really embraced into my academic classroom. But I do know that that takes my mental, like I have to have that conversation with them. I have to be that self-aware, right?
Oh, like two things in response. One, I don't know if you saw, Meg, what Maya put in the chat about this, about having this nightmare where I'm in a play and everyone else has rehearsed and knows the script and I haven't. Oh my gosh,
Yeah,
Maya,
terrifying.
I'm gonna quote you forever about that. But also, Meg, you were talking about not just putting the onus on the student, but it really is incumbent upon the institution to increase this awareness. And I see Lynn has a question.
What
Ooh.
differentiates, yep, those who decipher a hidden curriculum in the Whoa.
Lynn, can you qualify that a little bit more when you say, I think I kind of get where you're going, but when you say those who decipher, oh, you just mean like, what's the like an outcome of those who decipher it versus those who don't? What's your interpretation of that question, Meg?
Yeah, so my interpretation is what students are able to somehow just figure, like, right, put the puzzle pieces together for themselves, or walk in and be like, holy cow, everybody knows the play. I haven't rehearsed, but I'm not going to freak out. I'm going to figure this out, versus the students who find that to be, it's a complete shutdown.
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. And again, I'm kind of hesitant to put a like I like we were headed to put a lot of onus on the student. Like, oh, that student has grit. You know, I'm not gonna go there because if you go back to the example that I had so earlier using my family, what happened? The one question you could ask yourself was what happened after that, right? So I actually spoke up and said, like, this is how my family is experiencing the situation, and here's my recommendation going forward. Maybe have some kind of special pre orientation for new families who have not been actually asked the question, who has not been to Kairos before? Group us together and have an orientation, right? Or pair us with a family that has done that. That could have eliminated some things. So, but I have a strong sense of like cultural capital and all that in order to do that, right? Another family, let's say we were also English language learners or something like that. Like there are some other things layers that could have happened in which we would have felt less comfortable speaking up. So I just use that as a metaphor for our students too, in terms of what kind of access to resources do they have, what kind of cultural and social capital do they have in order to navigate this. This is why we often see students like first generation students, adult learners, international students, transfer students are the ones who tend to be disproportionately impacted, negatively impacted, I should say, by the hidden curriculum, because those are the folks that tend to be, at least for a period of time, kind of marginalized at our institutions.
Yeah, and such great comments that are going on in the chat. And you really addressed the second question. What are the who are those kind of are there specific student groups, right, that seem disproportionately impacted by this? Now, maybe I'm extrapolating a little bit too much here, but when I read all the news about what's going on in our wonderful world of higher education, those groups that you were talking about are ones that are receiving a lot of discussion, examination, because we need students, right, at our colleges and universities. Chronicle of Higher Ed, happy little article. Not only are we going to go through one demographic cliff, folks, we're going to go through two, just in case you missed it. Yay. So, where are we going to bring in students from? Adult learners, transfer students, international students, increasing numbers of first generation students. So, if those are the very populations that it appears to me you're being directed that appropriately so, I want to say, but like that's the okay, we really got to enroll these people. And we also really got to have a conversation about how are our institutions continuing to pull forward this hidden curriculum, right? That's then not setting them up for continued success.
And so here's the hard part about it. So the reason why it's hidden is because those of us who have already conquered this thing no longer see it anymore, right? So and so we have to be constantly reminded of the things that we're probably now taking for granted with our students, right? This comes up a lot when you hear like sometimes snarky conversations about a syllabus and things like that. But we have to put ourselves back in the shoes of the population that we're trying to serve. So, we those, probably those of us here on this call, we understand the function of a syllabus, and we have to be reminded that other populations don't. We have to teach people or let not just the student, but like the student's support system as well, I would say, inform them as well. I see Casey mentioned like acronyms for everything. Yeah, what that's a great example. So once you've gotten used to your institution, the acronyms just start, flow, become you get used to those acronyms, right? But then what about the student or the person who's experiencing them for the first time? Also, Meg, those populations we're talking about are probably the least ones likely to ask for help, right? And so may spend their time instead of just talking to a human being, but like Googling and trying to figure out the answers to things. So we want to make sure that students have enough resources and so and a positive support system that's not saying, why didn't you know this already? Well, how are they going to know that?
Right. Yeah. Very. And I am struck often, and there's been some wonderful comments in our chat about those things that, as we mentioned, acronyms, the physical layout. Can we get? I just want to give us
Yeah.
example because you wrote a really beautiful piece recently, kind of a that I think became a presentation about an example of this physical layout. I think it had to do with the library. I might be making this up.
Oh my goodness. Okay. I was like, what did I do? What did I write about, Meg? Oh, okay. Library. I love talking about the library. So, 'cause the library was a support system for me. So there were cues I had that, oh, I have been to a library before. So when I go to college, I know that that is a safe space for me. Libraries are pretty different. Campus libraries are pretty different from, let's say, a public library. And libraries today, just in general, are different than they were like 10 years ago. They're a little bit more like some might say, well, where are the books in the library these days, right? And so we want to make sure that our students are aware of these changes and speaking explicitly about those about what that space is. I have talked to students who've said, I need to feel smart in order to enter the library. Like, that's not what we want, right? So we're making assignments about go to the library. Then we want to just talk about it, talk about what to expect, like really walk people through why are you going there? What is expected of them? And then what are they, is there something you want them to bring back? And is there a key person that you want to refer them to for that resource? Whether we're talking about the library, we could just as easily be talking about mental health services. We could be talking about the career center. But I think this is, I think, is a very similar kind of response for some groups about, well, what is that thing? Why am I going there? And what do I expect when I get there? So those things need to be made very plain. And if possible, preview it, right? I know everyone's, it's not possible necessarily to walk the student over, but maybe short, like, we're in an era of like high social media and videos. Like, how incorporate those things into the classroom. Let students see it and get a sense of it first. That would have helped me with Kairos, to be honest.
Good. Yeah, this is what, and I'm thinking about how those things get passed down in our communities, right? Like traditions, right? That, oh, hey, it's the fifth grade celebration. I mean, I'm thinking even in our K-12 systems, right? Where, oh, parent who's never had a fifth grader before, let me tell you how this works,
Let me tell
right?
you how
Because
it works.
that's what happens at the bus stop. But when we're heading off to college, there is no longer that same sort of space, right, to share those sort of cultural norms and things. Joe had made the comment
I
that if
saw
you
that.
have,
I love Joe. Oh yeah, let's talk about
oh no,
Joe.
you go.
Well, for everyone, so Joe mentioned here, like, putting information in syllabus should not be enough. That is so true, right? It's like, we need to spend time clearly explaining our syllabus and answering questions throughout the semester. I so agree with you. I think of the transition my son and daughter made from high school to college, right? And they had school, my son in particular had a school where the syllabus had to be signed by the parent, right? Very transactional, right? And so he would take his syllabus, bring it to us, we would sign it, and he would take it back. Well, now you go to college and there's a different expectation. He's being handed something that's called the same thing that he had in high school, but there is a different expectation now. So point number one is we need to remind ourselves of what a student's prior experience is with something, and then get them up to speed about what it is that we want them to do with it, and not just simply say it's in the syllabus, right? But I love what Joe said about continually going back to that syllabus. And for some of us, if we have an opportunity, maybe the syllabus is sort of used as a shared, I mean, a tool that students have input on as well, then that sort of changes the student's relationship to it.
And there's some great ideas out there about how to make your syllabus. Last podcast, we were talking about liquid syllabi, which was something new to me, making syllabus more culturally responsive, ways to introduce it and engage students. And I Maria has brought up such a great point that I think had also been kind of previously put in the chat. We've got some folks, thank heavens, who have a lot of experience with K-12 system, it sounds like, on today. And I think it's so important. Thank you, first of all, for your work, K-12 system. But I have been reminded recently that sometimes when we are in our wonderful bubbles of higher education, we forget, right, about who is coming, the experiences of who is coming out of our K-12 systems into our classrooms. And so, she's talking, Maria specifically is mentioning students who have IEPs, 504s in that K-12 system, and then making that transition into our college systems, working with accessibility coordinators, which is very, very different. And God bless all the people doing that work because that's intense.
It is intense, and I think that when we put
And
this
important.
this notion of the hidden curriculum in the forefront, all students benefit from us being more transparent, for example. All students are going to benefit from that, right? I'm so appreciative, like you are, Meg, too, of the work that Maria has done and folks working with, a variety of students. But we actually have to put those students in the center. and also say this, also be really clear that these are not broken students. We have broken systems, and how do we help fix, how are we helping to fix the system?
That's so, and in so many spaces, right? Like I think about the things I'm reading about the struggle with transfer, for example. I mean, that's a system that, quite honestly, is not working. And lots of places for lots of reasons. So yes, I think that's a good thing to, that's an important thing. It's not our students, it's often our systems.
Wow, look at this chat. I'm loving the chat today.
I don't know that we've ever had a chat that's quite this robust. You
Ooh.
know, Robert's reminding us that faculty and staff, let new students know we're there to help them in any way. I know that sounds really, I mean, that's kind of like a basic thing, but like the reason we get to do this work is because of our students, right? And Richard has reminded us about the cultural challenge and power dynamics that exist in our institutions and that could be should that we should make sure we're being transparent. So that's a great, like, how do we, I mean, should I say to my first year experience students, hey guys, there is this hidden curriculum. And I mean, how do we kind of name this for our students and reveal its presence? Does that make
I
sense?
think it's important. First of all, Richard, I really appreciate like what you're saying about the power and everything, including registration, because what can happen is that, like I said before, these things just become normalized over time. And, for those of us who have more experience with them, we kind of forget about those power dynamics. So thank you for naming them. And then I would also say, yes, to your question, to your issue, to your question, Meg, I know for me, outside, like I didn't even know I was a first generation student. That language came later. And also when I learned about this concept of hidden curriculum, oh my gosh, so many things made sense now, right? Because what can happen is that a student will sit there, especially now, especially post-COVID, a lot of mental health concerns, et cetera. But a student will internalize a lot of these things and think, I'm the only one who doesn't know this thing. Right. Even in a class that's meant to like first year seminar or something like that's meant to overcome those barriers. If some students, let's say my children now, if they don't understand something, you know what's going to happen? They're going to call or text me, right? And I can help them navigate that. Where a student who doesn't have that, let's say they're first generation or their, their support system isn't there, who are they going to turn to? So I think that classrooms are a great place to address some of this equity, but I think naming it is really important. And then Jennifer, like Jennifer mentioned, who knows what a chair or a dean is, right? That I think, and what's their role? Meg, I can't believe we've gone this far, and this will be the first time I think I brought up pop culture, but I think about what are the messages that students are receiving about let's say a dean. Typically deans in movies and TV shows are not the people you want to go to. Those are the people you want to avoid, right? Or they're like stock characters or something like that. So if this is their prior experience, then that's going to be, again, like I said, a person, individual that student wants to avoid, when the reality is that's the person who could probably help remove some barriers for them.
And I love some more points about like, yes, what is a dean in popular culture, right? Those are never the people. They're always the ones, you're getting in trouble with. But and I remember, I mean, having that conversation. My dad was a dean of students. And I was like, Dad, I don't want to go to your college. They're only bad people who go to school there. Because our dinner time conversation was all about disciplinary action, right? So I mean, my dad did not help perpetuate a different stereotype there of deans of students. But some great Joe has brought up the point, like, what is a credit hour, right? And another story here, Thomas has talked about a recent high school grads, what's the last day of classes mean, right? I mean,
Yes.
our schedule is so different than our K-12 environment. And I love some folks talking about resources, Student Success Resource Center at the University of Northern Colorado, And Sarah runs a summer bridge program where she tells them outright there's a hidden curriculum
Outright.
and these unwritten rules. And you have that, Sarah, that's wonderful that you then have that time to work with students to understand this terminology and processes
Yeah.
before they even begin at our institutions. But I think, it's how do we. Like, it's wonderful that we have student success resources, but how do we get the students?
To them.
Yes.
Oh wait, first I want to address Sal and then I want to lift up Delaware County Community College in a second. But Sal mentioned one of my scariest freshman experiences was when I was told I had to see the ombudsman to resolve a registration issue. Look, we could have like a horror movie called The Ombudsman, right? Because that sounds so scary if you don't know, like I said, what it is. So Sal, glad to see that you made it through. Meg, I want to uplift Delaware County Community College. They have online a glossary of terms on their website that lists many of these things. I hope ombudsman is on there, but they define it and they give, so not just like a definition, but like I was saying too, like a little bit of the expectation. Like, what does it mean for the student? And so I think I've seen more schools doing this, like those kind of glossary of terms. What's great about one of the things that's great about it, not just defining the term, but when you put it on a website, you also make it public, right? And it's an equalizer. Anyone can access those glossary of terms because we're not here saying that all continuing students, continuing generation students know these things. That's not what we're saying. A lot of students don't know these things. We're just talking about those who may be, again, disproportionately impacted. But I really encourage you all to take a look at that. You could probably Google Delaware County Community College and glossary of terms and borrow from them how they're using it. We're also, again, in an era of social media, I've seen some campus centers use their Instagram account. Oh, Maya, thank you, Maya. I've seen some folks use their Instagram accounts to demystify processes. Sometimes they may have just videos where students are like showing from their perspective what an event is like or what an activity is like. And so then I'll just real quickly and I'll pause, uplift the work that Tamika Bailey is doing at Illinois State. So Meg, they have created out of their first gen program a campus audio tour from the perspective of the student, of specifically first gen students. So let's say the library or campus rec center. So it's a really short clip. I think there's like, it's an audio clip, and I believe it's like one photo, but the students are saying, like in real time, I am in the gym right now, and this is what I'm doing there, right? And you can hear like the basketballs in the background. This is some ways in which like folks can start to mediate against the hidden curriculum.
I love those examples, and that's really meeting students where they are, right? It's I don't know if people saw this got picked up a little bit in the press, but I think it's the University of Kentucky or Western Kentucky has created like a wellness module in Canvas that's like available to anybody. And I'm thinking about how we could use those spaces and link to them to really help students begin to navigate this.
So can
Joe,
we get Joe a crown? Like I'm putting a crown on Joe's head right now. Everyone,
Joe
talk to Joe after this.
has shared, Joe, you're going to have to come on and be one of our future guests, trying to take initiative to explain terms as we use them in conversation. And not wait for the student to ask a question. It's and Joe's making a great point. When you're working with students in those peak times and it's one after the other, it's hard to be able to have those kinds of constructive conversations. A semester is 16 weeks long or 15 weeks long, and this is what we mean when we say that. And here is the rhythm and routine of our calendar, even that. And I love how you just use the term continuing generation students, because that's a new term for me. So I've written that down. I will always from you. But I think that's a really great point too. I mean, my mom tells the story, and my mother was not a first generation college student, but she failed her first exam because it was in a blue book, and she didn't understand what a blue book. Does anybody even use blue books anymore? My mom made sure I had a pack of 100
Oh
on
my
day one,
God.
right? Because she failed because she didn't know what a blue book was, and the textbook was blue, so she brought in her blue textbook. Makes sense, right? Like, I didn't even know I was supposed to ask the question, what is a blue book? So, we have a couple of other comments. Nancy's asked, said, as an instructor that teaches a class that has students from their first semester to their last, part of my challenge, yes, is how do you share this information with the students who need it, right? And that can be, I mean, teaching in the community college, right? I get students who are at the end of their career and the beginning of their career, and what kind of spots in between.
And so how have you navigated that?
Yeah, so it took me a bit, but I'm finally kind of using my more experienced students as mentors in the class.
Yeah.
Right,
I
tell
wonder
us.
if Nancy, if Nancy's able to do that too. We understand there's like sometimes like structures that don't allow that. But yeah, that was one of the things that came to my mind too, is how do we then uplift those who, have already got it for whatever reason, right? Could they be a mentor or something like that?
And my experience is they're always delighted to share from, because they want people to learn from their own person. Don't, hey, I did this thing, don't do this, or I did this thing and it worked really well.
And it could be formally or informally, right? That sort of information sharing. And then Maya mentioning, yes, that students are about to graduate, still need this information, still need to be reminded about the blue book, right?
Right. Have you seen any sort of, you mentioned COVID, and that now we have may have students,
Oh my
who are sitting
goodness.
there so concerned about, and this is clearly I'm the only one this is happening to. I can't that disruptor. But I'm curious about, since we've had such an increase in online learning, have you seen any evolution kind of in our hidden curriculum as a result
Oh
of all?
my goodness. So let me explain a little bit more for folks who don't know. Number one, I was the director of first year experience during COVID when COVID hit, and then became a dean of student affairs a year after that. So the things that I saw, right? And also just one of the things that I also saw like some slow adaptations, unfortunately, for the institutions that I was working with. So, like, if we could all go back to March 2020 and think about this idea of Zoom being online, what was being communicated and expected of students. I mean, some of the expectations that we heard early on were like cameras on, and things like that. But which I think people have probably shifted away from now. I'm not sure. I'm really curious as to where those policies are. But I want to be fair. We were all going through the pandemic, so we were all adapting, not just students, but faculty, staff, administrators. We were all adapting. But I do think, from what I saw, again, you all may have had different experiences, because of just the nature of things and high anxiety, I do think that initially we weren't being clear about what it was that was being expected of our students and why. I think we got to remember the why part. Oh my gosh, Thomas put something in there. Terms like synchronous and asynchronous. I work with graduate students now that are still like, I continually have to explain if I'm having class async if class is asynchronously, what does that mean, right? So that's a really Thomas, thank you for that. That's a really great example of it, and so many people just kind of felt, we all kind of fell through the cracks with that one.
And that I think the impact of COVID learning is here to stay for a long time. I have conversations periodically with folks who are like, yeah, well, but that's all done. And I'm like my fifth grader will tell you the third grade class did kindergarten online in our county, right? And she's like, Mom, those kids, they don't understand how you behave on a bus. They don't understand a lot of the norms
The norms, yeah.
of education. She doesn't, she can't, if my fifth grader doesn't have that kind of language, right? But basically what she's saying and what she's seeing is that this group of students doesn't have those norms. Well, that's a decade before we get those kids in college. And I'm not trying to be negative, but I think we need to understand that that is the reality of who we're going to be seeing moving through our higher ed systems.
And how do we explain ourselves now, right? What does it mean to be online, to have class online? What's the expectation of being in person? And also, we have to communicate these things with compassion and with empathy, and not an assumption that they knew it already, or some sort of like shaming, which can happen, truthfully can happen sometimes. So this is just a friendly reminder for everyone to show some, to have some grace, with our students, with our colleagues as well.
We were reminded in a I was in a meeting last week that somebody was like, it's like our students don't know how to be college students. And I think that's true. And I think that's for lots of reasons. And so rather than kind of bemoan the fact, right, I think we have to step back and say, yes, okay, so what do
Now
we
what?
do about that? Right. Like, all right, there we are. So now how do we support these students so they do begin to understand in a non-punitive kind of way
There you go.
what are our what is the expectation here? What does it look like to be? I keep, how do we, I love this idea of this first generation audio tour of how do we use these resources on campus? Because I feel like we need to remind students, and it needs to be student voices, in my opinion.
That's where I was
This
going.
is what it looks like to be successful here. You can do this. I've walked your path. I've been in your shoes. Yes, this is what it looks like to be a learner.
Also, this was hinted at earlier too. Is there a way in which we can include the voices of their support system, whether it is family, chosen family, just we just want to. A student doesn't go to school alone, even if they're not connected directly to their biological family. They're still part of a system. So how can we incorporate them as well? And then also, oh, I casually mentioned adult learners. There is probably not going to be their parents per se, right? Not likely if we're talking about adult learner, but they again, but still family. Too, like how is all this a part of it? I remember we talked about this last time, Meg, about the ecosystem of a student. So when we're talking about something as important as the hidden curriculum, which again, someone had mentioned earlier, is very much tied to privilege and power, then we can't just talk about an individual student.
I love this idea of reminding us of that student ecosystem. And in September, in case you don't know, is parent college students who are parents. It's a month we recognize and celebrate the enormous population of students who are also parenting. And you there's some really wonderful ways, right, that we can celebrate that, involve that ecosystem in there. And I'm reminded of there's been some great examples. We started off talking about libraries where there are great children's sections, right? Or a way that we can involve this support system in that college going experience. So I think that's a beautiful reminder that it's not just involving the student, it's involving their really their ecosystem in their success. So
One more thing
yes.
before we go, but
I know,
I
because
want to
we
make sure I put out there, because what I hear this quite a bit, Meg, that when it comes to hidden curriculum is that students, don't know what they don't know. Students don't know things. And so I want to push on that a little bit more. I think perhaps that's a starting point. But we also want to acknowledge the funds of knowledge that students do have and what they do know. So when we're talking about hidden curriculum, we're acknowledging that there's going to be some barriers, that there's just going to be some things that students aren't familiar with, but we also don't want to have this expectation that students don't know anything at all, right? And so when it comes to that, what I would say that helps is starting with what does a st where's a student currently? Like I mentioned, the library, right? Most people have some familiarity. We don't want to assume, but there's some familiarity with the library. What do you know? And then make that bridge, right? And so we want to sort of uplift and value and respect where a student is coming from to begin with, have a starting point, and then build upon that starting point. So yes, we want to acknowledge the great work of Freire. So we want to like resist the banking philosophies and the banking approaches. We're like, these are empty heads, and we're just pouring all these like pouring all these key terms into their heads. That's not what we're saying here. We just again want to acknowledge what students do bring, what they are already familiar with. Sometimes we just have to make metaphors and make connections that for me, if you explain anything in sports to me, I would get it. I come from a sports, I didn't come from a college going background, but I came from a sports loving background. So if you use a sport analogy, I was like, oh, okay. So this advisor that I never ever went to when I was in college was like a coach. I would have gotten that.
Advisor equals coach. Oh, I need to go use that person.
Right. True
Such a
story. True story, Meg. Never went to academic advising. Never went to a career center my whole time in undergrad. Not at all. 6 years of undergrad. No. No academic advisor.
And you, but you managed to somehow pull it off.
Yeah, but we don't want that to be the case. We don't want we don't, I it's exceptional. We don't need the exceptional for that, right?
We've worked really hard to build these resources at our institution, so we want our students to use them. So, but you all are doing such great work out there. And the conversation is so, it's so exciting to hear from professionals who are doing this great work, who are meeting students where they are, who are excited about their work with students and helping to kind of uncover this hidden curriculum for them.
Everyone
LT,
gets a everyone gets an A plus today for their class participation was amazing.
I know, I do wish we could like send out stickers or something.
Absolutely.
That
Everyone's getting a virtual sticker.
would be cool.
And listen, I'm as Meg will tell you, I am super active and involved on LinkedIn. Speaking of hidden curriculum, oh my gosh, listen, you would never know it. 4 years ago, I was not on LinkedIn. I was like, ew, I don't want to do that thing. It's like Facebook, right? I had to learn the hidden curriculum of LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So feel free if you want to connect with me or follow up or tell me what it is that you're doing. Find me on LinkedIn, friend.
Yes, and you'll learn so much from LT. I mean, I love everything you post. I feel like every week I'm like, oh, that was such a great article. I'm so glad you shared it with us. So thank you, everybody, for hopping on today to our Friday Five Live. We will send out the recording. We're also available on all the podcast channels. So, if you want to share this with a friend or listen again, I think we pair nicely with a cup of tea or a good walk. We've got a PowerPoint presentation, and as you wrap up, there'll be a brief survey that helps us give you continued content to support you. Next month, we're going to be talking about, I'm very excited about this, student motivation, and how can we help our students understand what motivation is, what motivates them, and increase engagement, because disengagement is something that I'm hearing a lot of concern about from my higher ed folks. So excited to have that conversation in April. LT, I always learn so much from you.
Hugs,
And I always
buddy.
feel better about the world when I get to spend time with you. So thank you so much for your time this Friday. Hugs
Until
right
next time.
Sounds great. Take care, everybody. Happy Friday.
Friday 5 Live is brought to you by Innovative Educators. Innovative Educators offers 6 online services for your onboarding support and training needs. Visit us at innovativeeducators.org to see how we can support your student success initiatives.